ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So the word Vasudev refers to Visuddhisattva, which means purified goodness. It is at that state of consciousness, which is purified goodness, that is the state of consciousness of Vasudev. Not affected by the three modes of material nature, the state of consciousness which is completely dedicated to Krishna. Such state of consciousness is naturally pure. It is said just as the Ganges is flowing through the sea, bhakti is naturally leading to the lotus feet of Krishna. So today is the appearance day of Srila Ramanuja Acharya. And Srila Ramanuja Acharya stood out for his deep belief in the personal qualities of the Supreme Lord. Although in his earlier life he had impersonalist teachers, he didn't like their teachings, not at all. It hurt him when his teacher, once he was massaging his teacher, and while massaging the teacher was explaining some of Shankaracharya's explanations of the scriptures. And there was a particular verse which used the word kapi asyam. This kapi asyam was used to describe, the word kapi asyam was used to describe the lotus eyes of the Supreme Lord. And there, the way that Shankaracharya had translated it, he had broken up the word kapi asyam and into two words, kapi and asyam, which made the word kapi into monkey. And it said that the eyes of the Lord are reddish like the backside of a monkey. Right. So when Ramanuja Acharya, or at the time Ramanuja, heard that, tears came to his eyes, and he was massaging the spiritual master, and the tears just flowed from his eyes, not a little, but so much that they fell on the back of his guru, hot tears. So, guru looked up, what is this? Right, hot tears, why are you crying like this? He said, this explanation is too painful. So he's very shocked. You are disagreeing with Shankaracharya? So then Ramanuja said, yes, I don't think this is the right explanation. And he gave another explanation, breaking down that same word in another way, and then it meant it referred to that which was blossoming in the water, right? The eyes of the Lord are reddish like that which is blossoming in the water, namely the lotus. So that made much more sense, right? So Yadav Prakash, the teacher of Ramanuja, was shocked. Not only had he argued, his disciple had argued with Shankaracharya, but his explanation also made sense and it actually sounded better. So Yadav Prakash then sent Ramanuja away. He sent him away after that. And Ramanuja then, well, many other things happened, but in due course of time, Ramanuja started his own school. And Ramanuja became a Vaishnava. And as he became a Vaishnava, it was only natural that he would connect with the prominent Acharya of his time. At that time, Yamuna Acharya in South India was the predominant Vaishnava Acharya. So it was only natural that Ramanuja would connect with him. So he tried to meet Yamuna Acharya, but somehow or other by destiny, it was not meant to be so, because when Ramanuja appeared, it was just shortly after Yamuna Acharya had left this world. His body was still there. It was not yet placed in samadhi. And Ramanuja's body was in a seated position. Yamuna Acharya's body was in a seated position. Ramanuja came just too late. And then Ramanuja said that he made some solemn statements at that on that occasion. And he said he would fulfill the mission of Ramanuja Acharya. And there were three things he would fulfill, which I cannot remember. But one was to write a commentary on what? Vedanta Sutra? I guess. A commentary on Vedanta Sutra. That was Ramanuja's Vedanta Sutra commentary. And as he did that, one finger of Yamuna Acharya stretched. And does Tapas remember any, or anyone else remember any other fingers? Two more to go. To preach the mission was number two, and then one more.
To name somebody after Parashara Muni, to honor Parashara Muni by giving some devotee a name.
Yeah?
Parashara.
Was that it, huh?
Yeah,
okay.
Because one of the acharyas after a Muni was
Parashara. There we go. Thanks. So, in this way, Ramanuja Acharya fulfilled. It was clear that he came to fulfill the mission of Yamuna Acharya. That was the main point of the three fingers. That Ramanuja then was chosen as the successor of Yamuna Acharya, and they, although he was not a direct disciple, they made him the Acharya of the Math, even in the presence of all the direct disciples of Yamuna Acharya. So it was a little awkward because Ramanuja had to sit on the seat of the Guru in front of those who were actually senior to him, right, by Vaishnav etiquette. And it was an austerity. So one day Ramanuja went to one Brahmana. And he said to this Brahmana that you should give me the water that has washed your feet. And the Brahmana said, ah, how can you even say such a thing? This is too much. You are the great Ramanuja Acharya and you are saying that you want water that has washed my feet. Then Ramanuja said, look, you know, look what I have to go through. I have to sit on this raised seat. I have to accept all this worship, even placed above the generation of my spiritual master in terms of worship and so on. He said, I have to tolerate all that, and all I'm asking you is to give me a little water that has washed your feet. Is that too much? So from that day on, that Brahmana came every day and brought a pot of water to Ramanuja. All right. So the soft-hearted Brahmana, who understood that Ramanuja's sacrifice was greater. And Ramanuja explained, I also need something to maintain my humility. So in this way, Ramanuja Acharya showed a great example of humility. Another narration for which Ramanuja is very famous is that at an earlier stage, before he became the Acharya, he was sent by a teacher to learn elsewhere. And he was learning from a particular great learned Vaishnava who was teaching him a mantra. And he said, this mantra is very potent because anyone who chants this mantra will be delivered from the cycle of birth and death. He said, but this mantra is very confidential, so it should not be publicly spoken. If it's publicly spoken, then one will go to hell. The next thing Ramanuja did, after he heard this mantra, he went to the marketplace and he made an announcement that I have a very important thing to say, dear people of such and such place, please assemble. And many people assembled. And then Ramanuja very out loud spoke the mantra, Om Namo Narayanaya, very loud. And everyone heard it. When his guru, his siksha guru, later found out about this, he said, what have you done, what have you done, what have you done for speaking this mantra publicly? You will go to hell. And Ramanuja said, how could you do this? He said, how could you do this? Ramanuja said, yes, yes, I will go to hell. But all the people who heard this mantra, they will be liberated from birth and death. So it's worth it that I go to hell if so many people are being delivered. Then that teacher was shocked. And he just, on the spot, bowed down to Ramanuja and said, and from today on, you are the teacher and I'm the student, you know. Because Ramanuja in this way showed that he was more concerned to deliver others than himself. This is the spirit of a Vaishnava who is Paradukaduki. That is Vaishnava. Vaishnava must be like that. Vaishnava is at any time ready to sacrifice himself for the benefit of others. This is the spirit. This must be the spirit. Whatever that sacrifice is, that the Supreme Lord will decide. But the times will come again and again where we must sacrifice for the benefit of others. That is what we see in the great Vaishnavas, like Ramanujacharya. So that stands out. I think that from this point on, I will just not stay with the biography of Ramanujacharya. I will just carry on this point of being Paradukaduki, on the spirit of a Vaishnava who becomes concerned with the suffering of others. But he does so not just from a platform of just feeling the suffering of others. He does so from a platform of great ecstasy. First, we must see that such Vaishnavas are very deep in their love for Krishna, very deep. If one is not very deep in his love for Krishna, then the compassion cannot be complete. Because then that compassion cannot be joyful. Then if one takes on so much suffering from other living beings, then gradually one will become brought down by that suffering. Because when compassion is based on austerity alone, it cannot be maintained. But compassion based on ecstatic love, if one is really absorbed in ecstatic love for Krishna, then that compassion it has no bottom. Then there's no limit to that compassion. Then one can have that kind of compassion which can embrace the entire world and take on the burden of the entire world. It is the compassion based on love that is not affected by the burden of suffering that one gets confronted with when one gets involved in compassion. When one reaches out to those who are suffering, then one will have to suffer himself. That is inevitable. For the sake of delivering the suffering conditioned souls, one becomes very much involved in suffering. But Prabhupada by no means was ever affected because of the depth of his love. Ramanuja was not affected because of the depth of his love. Great devotees are not affected because of the depth of their love for Krishna. And then Krishna will decide what sacrifice will come in front of one, and what is that is destiny. Then destiny will be controlled by Krishna. Otherwise, destiny is controlled by karma. But destiny always remains. It is not that one becomes the controller. We are controlled by destiny, and destiny will decide what we will be this life and nothing else. We certainly will not decide what we will be this life. It will be destiny. And for a devotee also, his life will also be controlled by destiny, but Krishna determines the destiny of a devotee. So in this way, what is the point if we don't put some Krishna into the world? What is the point if we don't speak, the glories of Krishna? What is the point if we don't point at Krishna's glories? What is the point? Even if we ourselves are Krishna conscious, that is good, because then our life is pointing to Krishna, so that is also good. If someone lives a very, very pure life, completely dedicated to Krishna, that can make more noise than someone who stands on the street corner screaming out loud on the top of his lungs that this is the way, this is the way. Because it is purity, ultimately, that is the force that will change, that will influence the world. So different Vaishnavas may practice their Krishna consciousness in different ways. But if somehow or other we can develop this spirit of compassion, that we want to do something to give this gift of Krishna consciousness to others. If you look at the life of great acharyas, and of course close to us is Srila Prabhupada, then we see that one of the qualities that he has is avyaktakalatvam, right? Avyaktakalatvam means not wasting a single moment. And you see in Prabhupada, not wasting a moment, not wasting an opportunity. Trying every opportunity. So many examples of that. Right? Sometimes not exactly... sometimes... seemed almost unreasonable, right? For example, O'Hare Airport, just go ask the director to call it O'Hare Krishna Airport. You think, maybe a bit much. And Mukunda also laughed when Prabhupada asked him. But Prabhupada asked him. Mukunda laughed and didn't do it. What to say? An opportunity lost. Who knows? Maybe the director would have done it. Although we doubt it. But the spirit from try it, right? Try everything. You never know. Wherever there is an opening, try. Right? My mother used to say, No, you already have, and yes, you can get. So you can't lose anything. Right? If they say no, you won't lose, because that you already have. You can only gain if they say yes. So, go ask. Go. So Prabhupada had this very nice spirit, this of not wasting any opportunity, avyakta kalat, from not wasting a moment, not wasting a penny. If you see the accounts of the first days, it describes received a donation of $1 and then spent 19 cents on stamps and like this, you know, he would write down whatever he purchased, for every cent he would write down. Was he a miser that he even wrote down, received $1, keeping accounts of $1? No, he was not a miser. He simply did that because it was Krishna's money. And it had to be used for Krishna. It should not be wasted. Everything was to be used for Krishna and not to be wasted in any way. That was Prabhupada. And so not wasting an opportunity, not wasting a moment of avyakta kalat from what to speak of the work he did in the daytime, looking after his disciples, looking after his society at night, translating and writing his purports in deep meditation, chanting, and then a little rest here and there in between, really. Not much. Okay. So, avyakta kalat from. These are the symptoms of one who is operating on love. That can be done only on ecstatic love. That can only be done when one feels how wonderful Krishna is. At that stage, one must be overwhelmed by worshipping Krishna. One feels the presence of Krishna very, very strong. It is not that, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, I know that. That's not enough. But because we feel Krishna is so far, in a way. There's our life, and then there's Krishna. And we know that Krishna's there, but then, you know, then you go back to your life. Right? But such a Vaishnava, there's no question, right? Krishna is his life. Krishna is everything. Krishna is overwhelmingly present from that platform of being so overwhelmingly absorbed. One speaks of bhav, or even further, overwhelmed prema, but there's not much difference. It is said that such a devotee can bestow the greatest mercy. In the Chaitanya Sikshamrita, which is one of the major books that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also wrote hundreds of books, many, many books in his life, a very prolific writer. And some are very especially considered important, like Harinam Chintamani, or Jaiva Dharma, or Chaitanya Sikshamrita. So in the Chaitanya Sikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that a sadhaka, one who is following sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means one who is following the regulative process of devotional service. He can instill faith in the heart of the conditioned souls. And he can bring them to the point where they have faith in Krishna consciousness. Then he says that a devotee who has come to the stage of bhava, he can, by his own ecstasy, bring a neophyte to the stage of nista, the stage of firm determination. And a prema bhakta, he can bring a conditioned soul to any level of Krishna consciousness. So he explains like this. So it is interesting. to hear such statements. Srila Prabhupada, of course, is still bringing people, still capturing more and more people. This movement has not reached its full momentum yet. It is just sort of starting. It is like Prabhupada pushed something that is now rolling down the mountain, right, and catching more and more speed and taking more and more along in its course. Right? This is the nature of this movement. It has not reached its full strength as yet. Right? It is Prabhupada simply set something in motion. And now it is happening. And, well, if I may compare it to fire for a moment, then we say this movement is sparking the interest of many, many people and sparks off something in their heart. Some of these sparks that are lighting up will be extinguished again. But still, it may spark up again later. But some sparks are not going to be extinguished anymore and are catching full fire to the point where one is becoming committed, where one says, all right, okay, Krishna, I will be yours then, I guess, whatever. So where we begin to surrender to Krishna, where we begin to consciously give our life to Krishna, that happens. It is from there on, more will spread. Such people, they become automatically themselves, one might say, torches of that same fire, and they'll set others on fire. That will happen automatically by their association. In this way, this movement will spread from person to person. It may spread in different ways. Some are spreading it through the internet. We know that those devotees in Scotland had a hacking program, right? A program of hacking into computers and sending messages in there. Call out Gauranga. Right? And I heard some few years ago, I heard a report on it, that they had sent out like 300 million messages already. They had already sent out Call out Gauranga to 300 million computers. That's serious. That's a lot. It's definitely in impressive numbers. I mean, when I heard the numbers of that, I think like, this is quite something, this hacking actually, isn't it? If you think about 300 million people are getting somehow or other Call out Gauranga, you know, on their screen, something like that is quite something. So there may be so many techniques, quantity or quality, whatever it may be. Someone may reach out to 300 million with a message on a computer. Someone else may just go for one person and just go in depth. Whatever it may be, may share something with a friend. Doesn't matter. But how can it be avoided? I'm not talking here that you must preach, 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 right? And then we all must now become like Jehovah Witnesses and go door to door and sort of, you know, people say, no, not interested, put your elbow, no, thanks. You wear especially hard shoes, you know, so you can squeeze in between the door and so on. They must have special Jehovah Witness shoes, right? Their own shoe stores where you can buy them. Door stoppers, they call them. Anyway, so I'm not proposing that we go that way, because we don't have that discipline somehow or other. I don't know how they have it, but we don't have it. Definitely not now. So that's not what I'm proposing. But how can one not preach? Like, I have a brother, and the relationship was a little difficult with him because he used to tell me that I don't mind talking about you, but I don't want to talk about Krishna. And I go like, well, it's going to be hard, you know, because my whole life, everything is just sort of connected to Krishna from the moment I get up till I go to bed. Every moment has something to do with Krishna. I live in a temple of Krishna. I take only Krishna prasadam. I read books about Krishna. I speak about it. It's all Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. What can I do, you know? So it's a little difficult to separate my life and not talk about Krishna. It's not possible. No? Therefore, it is natural that we share our Krishna consciousness when we share something about our lives. And that's all it takes. That's all it takes. And that is much more potent than just rattling off a little lesson. You know, when in the 70s I learned how to distribute books, right? You had to say, hi, are you from here or out of town? Oh, you're from out of town, you're very lucky, because we have today here 100 promotion copies, and you're one of the lucky few. Congratulations. Yes, one of these books is for you. You mean, wow, I can have this? Yes, you can have this. I don't have to pay for it? No, you don't have to pay for it. Just give a donation for the printing costs, and so on. And then it all kicked in. And that's how I learned it. And I tried it like that. Well, in those days, and okay, it worked. But then years later, I came back after years in India, and I tried that again. I couldn't, it didn't work anymore. It just, that same old line, it just, I also didn't believe in it anymore. But when I told people on the street, while in my monk robes, you know, that I've just come back to the West after living 20 years in India, everyone stopped and said, really? That's very interesting. And what happened? So, you can see what happened. And then a whole story, and then, oh yeah, then they would take a book or not, but, you know, it was natural. It was natural. If we simply share, our life, people are naturally interested. Not everybody. Some people don't want to know you. That's the way it is anyway, no matter what you do. There are always people who don't want to know you. So what can be done? But in this way, this movement can move along. And why not just share this Krishna consciousness with the world? Because the world is in great need. The world is in need. The world is just, there's a great lack of Krishna consciousness. If we can give that, that is very nice. And on this day, remembering Ramanujacharya, I think it's appropriate that we sort of think in that way. It's a little outdated to speak about preaching. It makes think like something like, isn't it? Something like the dinosaurs of the 80s, you know, the Hare Krishna movement. Once, long, long ago, the Hare Krishna movement was like that. But we should influence the world. Why not? We should. We should make a mark on the world. Let's put something there. Put it on YouTube. The movies, why not? In Germany they did. They filmed everything, it's all on YouTube. In German. Why not? I mean, something. questions or comments, maybe. What did you read?
I left it a little bit on your last sentence.
Sentence.
Input here at the end there. The preaching is like a little outdated thinking. Because I also been, I had a discussion by the name of one of the books around boundaries and the Chinese. And we were discussing this point how to kind of reach out to people like in that according to time and circumstance and try to find out what is the situation now. Because sometimes I think we kind of maybe think that there is not the same preaching spirit as in old times, but there is preaching spirit.
Yeah.
Times are different.
Mm.
And situations are different. The initial push of the so-called old times, it's like, I mean, time is moving on.
Sure.
So I think sometimes it might be a little dangerous to think that now there's no preaching, now there's not the same amount of time. It's just that we have to find out what is relevant now. There's a different kind of generation coming up. So one should not say, I think it's easy to get a little like resonated or maybe frustrated or whatever to think that nothing is happening. I think it's good to not become negative and take it to the we are living a little bit in the past sometimes when we get older, like in the joy statement, you know, having ecstasy now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe one has to not fall victim to
Yeah, I hear.
No,
very valuable, nice. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I think that also we have changed, you know. I mean, times have changed, and we have changed. I mean, it's like I said, I can't identify now with what I did when I was 25. I really couldn't do the same, you know, anymore. It's got to be something a little different, right? No, I think even book distribution in its old style is still alive and still relevant. I mean, it's just, it may not be exactly what I would do now, right? But I always had a missionary spirit anyway, and I still have personally, right? And then I think it's one thing that I mean, in the 60s, I wanted to change the world, you know. I was there on the street with my guitar, trying, you know. And that spirit is still there. I still believe in this kind of philosophy. If you want to change the world, you've got to start with yourself and things like this, which all comes from the 60s, right? Slogans from the 60s. Those things I thought made sense then, they still make sense to me now. You know? So I don't think that the past is all dead or gone. It's still alive. And I think that also, but what I think is everyone must find his own way to communicate about our, because being a devotee is for us, it's a way of life. It's what we believe in. It's what we stand for. And we must be open about it. We must be able to communicate about it. The world needs it. The world needs this Krishna consciousness. There's no doubt about it. People are waiting for it. It's like sometimes people say, don't you find it is difficult to walk around in these clothes all the time? And I tell you, I travel a lot and I just meet so many interesting people. and only sometimes inert. You know, sometimes if inert, it's like some guy stood behind me and says, you are just like Al-Qaeda. You know. I look at sort of at him. Yes, he said, yes, they should lock people up like you. He's standing behind me in the queue on the airport, you know. And I look at the guy and I go like, well, I said, you know, I'm just peacefully standing here in this queue. I'm peacefully living my life. But you are someone who wants to put other people and lock them up, right? I said, if anyone has a terrorist mentality, it's more you than me, right? You know, I'm just peacefully here. Why do you want to lock me up, sir? What is terrorism? Anyway, we had a little shuffle in the queue. It made the waiting a little shorter. But mostly I don't meet such people. Mostly I meet nice people, actually. Very nice people who are really interested and who are respectful. Right. And I was in New York, and I was approaching some people on a park bench with some books, and then this man goes, and he goes like, "What's that? You know, what's that?" Right. And I said, it's like, you know, he goes like, "Come on, you know, you dress up like that." I said, "Look, you know, I've lived for this like a monk for most of my life, you know." I said, you cannot just make it so cheap, right, as if this is some sort of masquerade. It's really something more serious than that, right? And he was shocked, and then his wife or girlfriend, whatever she was, she just told him, shut up, you know, shut up, be a little respectful, you know. He's a monk, can't you see? And then she bought the books, you know. And then she just told me that the guy was her boyfriend, and that he didn't have a job, and that she was doing all the, she was working. I was thinking, God, you know, get rid of this bum, you know. The guy was just a bum, a sycophant, a parasite. Well, poor girl. What to do? Met the wrong guy. But anyway, so there are many people who are actually very respectful men and interested and open, even if you're so blatantly Hare Krishna as this, what to speak if you're a little more socially integrated, you know. So there's plenty of scope. I met this yoga lady. We were on the way to India on this flight, and this lady was into Iyengar yoga, and she was a yoga teacher. And we had a nice talk. She's an actress. And then she said that, and what are you actually belonging to? I said, oh, Hare Krishna. She said, oh, no, Hare Krishna. Oh, no, not Hare Krishna. I was like, oh, well. I said, do you have any bad experience with Hare Krishna or anything? She goes, oh, Hare Krishna, I got really cheated, you know. I got cheated, you know. I have this problem. I can't say no. Well, you know. So yes, one day a book distributor came to her house and she couldn't say no. So she bought a full set. Everything. Including the little books and whatever, you know. Fool is fool, right? And she paid thousands and thousands, right? And it wasn't kronas, it was ten thousands of kronas she paid, right? Tens of thousands. So, you know, later, when her husband came home, and it was a big thing, she got cheated by the Hare Krishnas, and then all the friends and the whole family, and she was like for years the laughing stock of the family, you know. And it's like those books were standing there as the testimony of her foolishness, right? And the whole family was just looking at these books sometimes, yes. And for years she had suffered from the embarrassment. So then I asked her, I said, okay, I said, did you read them? She said, no, I never read them. I said, well, maybe they're really good. And if they're good, then you just tell your family, actually, these are really good books. And she thought, this is great. This is really great. This is the way out, you know. This is great. When I come home, I'm going to read these books and I'm going to tell everyone they're really good. So you see, you know, some people are waiting for us, you know. They're just waiting for us. Anybody else? I guess that we are naturally living in our own little privacy circle, and to step out of your privacy circle is a little difficult. And in the past, in the Hare Krishna movement, we used to do it under the social pressure in the movement. You had to, right? They forced devotees to do it. But to step out of your own privacy circle, your friends, your social circle, and just step up to strangers is something that people don't do very easily. And I guess we don't do that anymore. And it feels also something like, why impose upon someone, you know? And it feels a little like, especially if someone is like, you know, you go like, do you know the Hare Krishna movement? I was in Gothenburg and we were lost, you know. I mean, we were lost. So we were driving in the car and we were lost. And I said, okay, no problem, we'll just ask somebody. So we wind down the window and I stick my head out of the window. And this man goes like, I go like, please, sir. I said, please, calm down. I am a foreigner. And I am lost. please tell me where to go. Please. Please, it's all right. I told him three times. Finally, he said, okay. Yes, yes, foreigner, lost. Okay, yes. See, so it's sometimes difficult also. People take it difficult. I think these are the factors, probably, the privacy on both sides, right? Hard to impose upon others. So we must find other ways. It doesn't also necessarily have to be on the street, you know. It's also a little intense if someone on the street comes to you. If someone on the street walks up to me, I also have one hand like this, you know, okay? Okay, no. Two hands, whatever, you know. Someone wants to give me something on the street, no thank you. I also don't take it, yeah. Because so many crazies on the street in this or some salesman who wants to sell. It's clear that somebody wants something off you on the street, you know. So maybe we need other forums, that is all. A little more respectable forums to approach people. And if we do that, if we create more respectable forums to approach people, then we will be appreciated, actually. Yeah. And that is in this time that works very well, when we look for but still, the days of devotees somehow or other being super bold and distributing these books anywhere and everywhere, it was special. I mean, I tell about the hospitals. That was the most outrageous thing we did in Holland. I didn't do it too much, but the devotees used to go into these hospitals during the visiting hour, and just with books and just walk right in. When around each bed there were five people, go into the ward with 20 beds, So there's 100 people in the room. Give everyone a book. 2 devotees, one gets the book, the other stands on the chair and gives a speech. And, you know, about the charity action. And in a hospital, people are very charitable. So, you know, they all gave quite a bit, and it was really, I mean, big tapas. It was huge. The only thing was that in the middle, the nurse would walk in. This is the stage where I would almost become a patient in the hospital, right?
What is going on here?
I'm having a heart attack. Anyway, then they had to waffle their way out. So there was this one devotee, he was so slippery and expert at this, he just did a thing, yes, oh, the letter, did you get the letter? The letter, the charity action, the letter, yeah, it must be in the office, go and look, and send them back, and then whole things, he couldn't find it, of course, well, they had it on the other floor, I mean, you know, you look again, it must be there, and then, well, do you have a copy? You know, yeah, of course I have a copy. You know, we can see. Well, okay, just have to go down to the car and bring it. You know, stupid and like this, and then we'd have to escape. So we'd somehow or other escape, and then instead of running out of the hospital, we would just do it again one floor down. That was too much. That was absolutely too much. My nerves couldn't handle it. But it was huge, huge. Yeah. So devotees did amazing things in those days. Yeah. And sometimes they did have to run away. So one of these devotees ran away, and then the police was following him. He ran into an alley, and it was a dead-end alley. And he just went into some door. There was a door in the wall. It was open. He went in. There was a corridor that was light. He walked in. He carried his box with books. And then he walked right onto the stage. And then there was a man who said, oh, here come the prizes. Thank you very much. And he brought the prizes. And it was a conference of butchers. And they all got a book like this. True story, you know. True story. Purnatattva. Right? Yeah. So things that were happening were also out of this world. Out of this world. But it was wild. It was these were the underground days of the Hare Krishna movement, when it was a wild underground movement. It was adventurous, but also crazy. Nowadays, we're not so underground anymore. Now we are very... Yes. Any other question or comment? Yeah, I mean, it's no necessity to wear devotional clothes in every situation, of course. It's fine to sometimes blend in. I think we need both. We need people that don't blend in, and we need people that blend in. If our whole movement just blends in, then people start saying, I never see you guys anymore. Huh? And so there need to be some people who are like sort of bright and clearly visible. But I was in Rajasthan, in India, in a place where there were many, many Muslims. And then while we were there, there was someone saying, and this book of Salman Rushdie, Satanic Verses, is a really good book, to a Muslim. So, well, then it created a little shuffle, and the next thing there were... big riots in that town, and they burned down, the Muslims burned down hundreds of Hindu shops, and I was walking around in bright orange, and there were snipers on the roof, and I was thinking, boy, I mean, I make a good target, don't I? And I can especially see to what I belong, you know, it's like sort of like, those are moments when maybe saffron is not the most advisable color. Or stay indoors. A kaftan may work better. So, yes, yeah, some adjustment according to the situation is all right. Sure. Blend in. But if you blend in too much, the reason, I mean, we also need some devotional clothing for ourselves at times. Because if you just blend in all the time, then one day you just forget, you know, your devotional identity. We need some support also. So devotional clothing have their part to play. It's not just not just for preaching, but for ourselves. I think these days, you know, in the past we did some incredible propaganda work. We were really good at it. But now the time's come, we also look to go a little deeper, which in the past maybe was not always there. So we must also see if we go deep ourselves, then we can influence people in a much more potent way. I have an African disciple, and he just had a sweater, he works in an office, and then he has this trendy sweater, sort of real cool cut and everything, and then it's sort of letters printed half here over here, the guru. Pretty cool man. So, yeah, you can print all kinds of things on your clothes. Finished. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.